Blog Talk Radio.
This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave and ancient land to me. And when the morning sun reveals her hills and plains, then I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand, this land with me, and walk this lovely land with me. Though I am just a man, when you are by my side, with the help of God, I know I can be strong.
Well, good evening. Welcome to Yada Yada Radio. My pleasure to be with you. We're here with Kirk and with Dee. You know, there's a new strain of COVID-19 that is going around. And you should ask me how I know there's a new strain of COVID-19 going around.
You didn't get it, did you?
No, I did get, I was vaccinated three times and still got COVID three times. But my wife has this new strain, and the new strain is really rough. It is a horrible sore throat, raging headaches, achy, weak. I think this is by far her worst experience so far with COVID. And
I'm sorry to hear that.
She is in the middle of suffering from it. Another subject, I think most of the listeners here in this program know that my wife and I celebrated Pesach 3 weeks ago, and that there are others, including Dee, that are going to celebrate Pesach about a week from now. And in Israel, the rabbinic celebration time is a week from now.
No, we're celebrating.
So I was just curious with Dee, probing Dee as to, did she know why the Passover, that the rabbis moved to Passover from the closest new moon to the vernal equinox 2 weeks after it to this particular date, which is 9 days further from the new moon. Do you know why?
Yes.
Explain to me. I didn't prior.
Yeah, it's because of Easter. The rabbis do not want Passover and Easter overlapping. So the time that you would normally celebrate it from a either an observation point of view or a calculated astronomical point of view would have been 3 weeks ago. But since that overlapped with Easter week, the rabbis automatically change it. They don't tell you that, but that is the plan. Now, I have personally no qualms when anybody celebrates any one of the Moed Mikre, so as long as they're thoughtful about it. And I take that position because Yahweh has made it clear when Hezekiah found a copy of the Torah, read it, and said, "Oh boy, we're in deep doo doo here. We've got 185,000 of a serious worst hanging outside of the walls.
Yeah,
and we're going to be dead, tortured, and flayed alive here very quickly. And the Torah says that the only way we're going to be protected by Yahweh is to get rid of all the religious artifacts and also to celebrate Pesach, Matzah, and Bukurim as they were prescribed. And You know, he brought in the Loic Cohen priest and said, this is what we need to do. And they said, say what? Can you explain that to us again? And, you know, he just went to Yah and said, listen, you know, it's in 2 weeks and I can't make it happen. We would do a lousy job. We'd be surrounded by religious artifacts. We'd have a bunch of bumbling knuckleheads trying to explain this to the people. I'd really like a postponement of 2 weeks. Would that be all right with you? And I said, sure, that's fine. And then to suggest something that I'm hoping I can talk Lay into this year, since there are two different times that people are celebrating Pesach. I really love Pesach and matzah, so I want to see if we can celebrate it twice. And I, you know, I'm laughing here, and that people might say, you know, well, that's not the way that it's supposed to be. And I'd say, well, look again, Hezekiah. That worked out really well. We have a real affirmation that worked out well for Hezekiah because there were 185,000 dead Assyrian troops outside of Jerusalem, and even the king came back and wrote, he says, I had him trapped like a bird in a cage. But oh, drat. That Passover thing really ate me up alive. So we know that that Yahweh was not only approved it, but that it prevailed. So you can celebrate these feasts more often than just at their appointed time. I'm not sure that's should be a regular practice, but this year there seems to be a really good excuse for it. And, of course, one of the things that were two other factors here for you, D. One was that this is one of those years where there is a solar and lunar eclipse. And while neither is over Israel, there are, you know, 40% of the Jewish population in the world lives in America. And the solar eclipse was a very long show over the heartland of America. And so we do know that in 2030, which is when Elia and I have the opportunity to have fun with a bunch of religious and political idiots and herald Dode's arrival, there will be a solar and lunar eclipse at the first of Abib, and then at the 14th of Abib. Solar eclipses are always at new moons, and lunar eclipses are always at full moons, and they are 14 days apart. So that's an indication of a very special time in 2030, 3 years before Yah's return, that there will be a lunar and solar eclipse. And, of course, there will be a lunar and solar eclipse also in 2033 that will coincide both with Teruah and then again with Sukkah. So these events can demark very important times. There was a lunar eclipse, for example, in 33 and a solar eclipse as well. So these things are part of God's scheduling. Now, not everyone matters. It's only the ones that actually overlap key events in his timeline.
Right.
And so that was part of it. And the other part of it was that you were of the contention that that the time of Jacob's troubles, rather than being the 7 years that most people have calculated, and with 3.5 of it being the most intense, that you think it's possibly a 10-year period, a full decade, with the final 7 years being more intense and the final 3.5 years being exceedingly intense. And there is support for that, particularly when you realize that October 7th, 2033, and our 2023 and October 7th 2033, exactly 10 years apart to the day, mark the day after Sukkah attack by the Muslims that set the world on fire against Israel, and the beginning of Sukkah in year 6000 Yah, and they are exactly to the day, 10 years apart. So there is thoughtful reasons to to make these conclusions. As we go back into the Mizmor, I did receive an email this week from a husband and wife that said, you know, how old do you think Dode was when he returned for the second of his three lives, when he came back to fulfill Pesach, Matzah, and Bukurim? And my initial response was, you know, it really doesn't matter, so we're not told specifically, because of the uniqueness of this event, where all of the description of what was going to occur and what did occur was provided anywhere from 700 to 1,000 years in advance of the event. So we already had a full explanation of how Pesach, Matzah, and Bukurim were going to be fulfilled. So we, you know, you could dispense with the whole idea of disciples. You can dispense with the whole idea of a New Testament. You don't have to have, and there's no benefit whatsoever of him starting out at, for example, the last time he started out at 8 years old, which was when Yahweh anointed him. There's no reason for that. My thinking was that because he was anointed for the second of three times at 30 years of age, that 30 would be the most likely age based upon, there's no other reason we'd be told a clue like that. Elia and I arrive in Jerusalem exactly 3 years, well, not exactly 3 years, but 3 years and change, 3.5 years actually, by the time you go from Pesach, Matzah, and Bukurim, we arrive on Passover, and the Yahweh returns 3+ years later in the seventh month of the third year on the 10th day, which is October 2nd, 2033. So that same three-year time period would play out, and Yahweh likes consistency, so it'd be every reason to see Elia show up heralding Dode's return 3 years in advance, and Dode arriving 3 years in advance of the fulfillment of Pesach, Matzah, and Bukurim in 33 CE, which is year 4000 Yah. The other thing that makes that timing interesting for us is we're just thinking through how in the world did the Christian New Testament get off to such an incredulous start. And it would be difficult for the likes of Paul, who was the primary inspiration of it, to have conceived the myth of Jesus Christ out of complete thin air. So it is highly likely that somebody was there who was considered the Messiah. It is highly likely that somebody was there who was considered the Son of God. It is highly likely that Pontius Pilate was indeed the procreator of Judea, and that he did order the flogging and crucifixion of someone, because we have a prophecy that speaks explicitly about being whipped and crucified. So these, and we also have prophecies that explain that this was going to happen on Passover, as the Passover lamb takes away the guilt of the covenant family. So we have a Passover fulfillment, which is, they don't mention it's Passover, but nonetheless, that is the timing of the mythological Jesus, Son of God, Messiah. All of those things are true. Crucifixion, all of those things are true. And so the mythos of Jesus was substituted over the actual Messiah and Son of God, Dode, David, who fulfilled these events. Now, that being the case, there are a few things in the so-called Christian New Testament that ring true. well, two anyway. One of them happens to be the Sermon on the Mount. And what you find is the Sermon on the Mount is one of two things in Matthew that aren't plagiarized from the three other Gospels. And the other part is the Olivet Discourse. And come to find out, both the Sermon on the Mount and the Olivet Discourse were kept by the by a group of Jews who Ebonim is what they referred to themselves as, based upon one of the Hebrew words that was used in the Sermon on the Mount. And so they referred to themselves by that name. They spoke and wrote Hebrew. They wrote down the events of the Sermon on the Mount and of the Olivet Discourse in Hebrew. And we know the book exists because it was mentioned by several people who cited snippets from it. And it is the basis of those two uniquenesses of the book of Matthew. And while the rest of it is absolute trash, there is a very significant possibility that Dode made both of those two declarations.
Mm-hmm.
So, and there really isn't anything else that you would say, well, what else would be valuable? What else would you want to know that you don't already know through the Mizmor, particularly 2288, 1, 2, 3 here and 4, the 89th, and Yeshaya 53, and Yeshaya 9 for that matter. So we're given all the insights that we need to have to understand the fulfillment of the event. But I do think those two things are likely to be Dode speaking, and all the rest was just a replacement theology. Very much like Rabbi Akiva created the false Messiah and Bar Kokhba, son of a star, which is where the Jews get the Star of David myth. And so I think that that they were trying to explain what a Messiah and son of God was doing, fulfilling Pesach in the Yobel year of 33 CE, 4,000 Yah, and the best they could come up with was 100 years later, Bar Kokhba, just as the Christians, Paul particularly, came up with Iesus Christus. Replacement theology through and through.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anything you want to add, either of you, to that? We'll get back into the Mizmor.
Is where do you get stuff like this except here?
Yeah. Yeah, it's really interesting stuff.
It is interesting stuff. It's fun to think about. And the reason that I like talking about it, and just a uniqueness here, but, you know, in about two or three weeks probably, time, I'm going to be switching to Questioning Paul, which will be called Twistianity, and I'll be writing two new long chapters for Volume 1. One will be a mm-hmm. variation of why you, why me? Why are we having this conversation? And what right do I have to be speaking to you about these things? And the second will be the short version of the life of Dode and him serving as the Pesach AL, because you have to know that, because everything else is a corruption of it. And so that has to be stated right at the beginning, and then you laid out the cards as they fall from there. And so part of what I'm going to have to convey is what parts of the myth were likely true, but based upon Dode and corrupting, replacing him with a myth, and things like the virgin birth, a lie. The dancing fetuses with John the Baptist, a lie. The whole John the Baptist episode, a lie. So there, a trip to Egypt, probably also a lie. The crucifixion, true. I think the Sermon on the Mount is so anti-Christianity that it's hard to imagine that there wasn't a source for it that was anti-Christian. And the same thing is true with the Olivet Discourse. So I think those things were likely true. Disciples, probably not. Walking on water, probably not. Transfiguration, probably not. But then you kind of get to the okay. So what's left, and you'd have, you know, what is the possibility that some of what Yahu Kanan wrote could have been accurately reflected, since he didn't spend much time on anything. You know, he kind of begins his story very near the time of the crucifixion and the fulfillment of Passover, and then the rest of it details what was discussed thereafter. So,
I have a question.
Interesting choices. Yes.
Are you suggesting that Dode's second arrival, he wasn't born of woman, and that was all in reference to his initial lifetime, or are you saying that he would have gone through the normal human process being born because he was of the same genetic line, but that his mission began at 30? I'm just trying to clarify.
Yeah, the first time Dode arrives, guess what we're not told?
What?
His mother.
His parents.
We don't know
if that, yeah.
We don't, yeah.
Yeah, his mother.
Well, we know his dad.
Yeah,
his dad was
right.
His dad was really a dunder. His dad was a dunderhead. His dad had a name, though, that had merit, because the name explained really what Dode's mission was going to be, to stand up and be noticed. But he has no mother. It's a silent, completely silent on that issue. And then, I'm not saying he didn't have a mother, it's just that his mother is meaningless. So that would also mean that if he had a mother in the second arrival, that would have been meaningless. I mean, the whole mythos of Mary, well, the whole mythos of Mary is based on Astarte and the Queen of Heaven and the Mother of God and all that kind of Babylonian pagan rubbish. Mm-hmm. We're not told this, but my best understanding would be there would be absolutely no reason to have the King of Kings, the Messiah, the great orator and prophet, sit around as a baby and as a teenager and hang around for 30 years. Seems to me that Yahweh created a body just as he did with Adam, put a Dode soul inside
that
of it.
That is interesting.
And say, here
that
you
is
go.
Yeah.
So that's
considering
my, that's my
Adam was, Adam was the one being redeemed as well, by the skinsman. That's incredible because, that study I did in our pack shed about the DNA being preserved through that lineage all the way to Dode. That's
right.
Really cool.
Yeah, there is a prophecy that speaks of his DNA being preserved, and we could use his DNA to create a 30-year-old man.
Wow.
Dode's soul inside.
I appreciate that.
And there you have it. Now, and you might say, well, that sounds odd to you. Well, what do you think? He's going to come back as the King of Kings on Yom
little
Kippurim, and he's going to be a little baby that his mommy's going to get, and we're going to wait around 30 years for him to grow up while nothing happens, twirling our thumbs?
That's funny.
So if God, if he's going to come back a whole lot more amped up on the on his third arrival.
Oh, yeah.
But
we're not coming back as babies either.
But wouldn't it make sense that he arrives the first time the normal way, but there's no fanfare at all the first we hear of him? He's 8 years old, and his father is poo-pooing him, and we have no mention of his mother. I was saying, but he's my guy, and I want you to know that my criterion for choosing him is different than anybody else's. And then the second, there is it's a miraculous occasion, because all we want is a body that's going to serve as the Passover lamb, a bashar. It's a piece of meat that we want to serve as the Passover lamb. It's going to be incinerated that night. Why linger around with that?
Yeah.
So I think that we're ramping up with miracles from the 8-year-old being anointed and shortly thereafter slaying Goliath, which is now my favorite story.
And we
story
know that, that Yahweh's walked the earth before in a physical form and didn't come as a baby, like with Abraham. So it's not like it's an alien concept that he could have a new body created. So that's really intriguing.
Yep. So anyway, that's my thought on him. And you know, Yahweh's recognizes what Einstein pointed out to us, that energy and matter are the same things. They're just different amounts of the same thing. So when we move from where we are now to our eternal state, we are going to become energy-based beings with our soul comprising the reservoir of our attributes and abilities and personality. So in a energy-based state, we have the ability to maneuver through the various dimensions, all the way up to 7 dimensions. We can explore the entire universe. We can be immortal. We can genuinely be perfect. We can be infinitely smarter than we are now, and more powerful and capable. But we can at any time dial down a portion of our nature into matter to enjoy a walk in the park, you know, a swim in the ocean, a walk on the beach, a good meal, like Passover. And so since that is absolutely possible and the equation to do it is straightforward, it is E equals MC squared, and Dode is going to come back as this kind of energy-based being, and we are going to become, like him, energy-based beings. There is no reason whatsoever why God couldn't use E equals MC squared and deliver Dode as a 30-year-old with his DNA and just take some of that spiritual energy and convert it into physical energy and matter. So this is not
a
difficult for us to wrap our brains around. It's not a difficult concept from where we are anticipated to be here beginning now less than 9 years from, just 9 years from now. So those are my thoughts. By the way, you know, we've said this before. I'm going to say it again. There are certain things that I'm emphatic about. Yahweh's name is Yahweh. We know that there are 5 conditions and 5 benefits of the covenant. We know that there are 7 Moed Mikrae. We know that the first 4 were fulfilled by Dode and that they enabled the 5 benefits of the covenant. That Dode is returning on Yom Kippurim in year 6000. Yeah, there's things that we are emphatic on and say, this is true. God has but one name. The 2 most important people in the human history are Moshe and Dode. Full stop. You know, it goes way downhill from there. There are certain things we'll say. There are other things which is say that as you learn and you get to know Yahweh and you study his Torah, prophets, and Psalms, that you develop an appreciation for his nature, for his plan, for the way he likes to do things. And and it's in that process that we come to see things like, for example, Abraham's and Yishak's dress rehearsal, harbinger, if you will, for Pesach exactly 40 Yobel, 2,000 years later, in exactly the same spot. Now you understand why there was so much of a repeated conversation about, Father, yes, here I am, my son. And then Yahweh saying, don't take the life of your son, your only son, the son that you love. I'm going to provide the lamb. And so you get right to, well, the lamb is going to be the Son of God. And that lamb is going to be here in exactly 40 Yobel. It's going to, because this event was to confirm the covenant, it's going to enable the covenant's benefits. And so God's most beloved, oh, by the way, Dode means beloved, is going to serve as the Passover lamb in that spot exactly 2,000 years thereafter. So you can make conclusions based upon the clues when you come to know God and the way that he likes to paint pictures and tell his story. So when I say that I think he's going to be 30 years old and he started at 30, I can tell you that if you want to disagree, you are more than willing or fine to do so. But also tell you that when something really resonates, and there's so much of it that rings true, like starting at 30, what I typically find is that before long, we'll stumble on an affirmation of it that we just didn't see until we had that mindset. And then we'll read it and say, oh, well, there it is, right there. So, and again, we are growing as a covenant family. So there are things that are fun for us to talk about particularly about Dode as our Savior and King. They're fun to talk about. And so long as we are thoughtful about it, these are good things. You know, I was talking to my good friend Joe on the phone today, and he was talking about, you know, one of the things that's very unique about this work is most people, when they make a mistake, they are defiant and they don't want to admit it, and they most certainly won't go back and rewrite something they wrote 20 years ago. We're eager to do it, you know? We are growing and you're learning, and if we said something that we later learn is better said another way, we're very happy to go back and work it through. And we just try to do, the other thing he said is that most people are afraid to publish something, to go out there and put your name on something that you know is not perfect. And my deal has been all of my life that perfection, first of all, is not achievable by us humans. And second of all, it's always a bad value. It takes too much time to have a perfect result. So even, Dee, when you're creating your timeline, I say, you know, create something that you're proud of, that's your best effort, that you think is really quite good, makes a very significant contribution to our understanding. Then publish it, put it up for people to benefit from, and improve it over time as you learn more and you are able to do so.
I'm constantly updating it.
And that's exactly the way that I think we should be working. As we learn more, we update what we have previously written. And right now, the person that's cringing is Jackie because she has the responsibility for following through on all of that. Actually, she's not cringing at all. Jackie absolutely loves this, and you can see the consequence of her love every time you see pictures of her, of her children, and particularly her grandchildren. So it's her effort has paid off exceedingly well. All right, I'm going to return now to Ms. Moore. We were on just beginning Ms. Moore 4:5, and it reads as follows: choose the appropriate sacrifices. Do so honestly, accurately, and fairly to be vindicated. And put your confidence and trust in Yahweh. Ms. Moore, lyric to be sung, 4:5. What did we just say? Be as accurate as you can be. Be as honest as you can with your consistent, fair, systematic with your analysis and work. Choose which sacrifices, which offerings, for the feast are the most important, and put your confidence in Yahweh, and things will all work out. So, for example, when we prepare the lamb for Pesach, Passover, and we arrange the unyeasted bread, we should acknowledge who and what they represent, sharing an accurate assessment of what Father and Son have accomplished during the Mikra is really essential to benefit from them. I mean, I think that we went from being unique and knowing when the first four mikrae were fulfilled, knowing that each of the first four mikrae provide the five benefits of the covenant. They open the doorway to life. Take away our guilt, perfecting us on matzah. On Bikurim, we become adopted firstborn children into God's family. And on Shavuah, we are empowered and enriched by God. Those are the first four Moed Mikrae. They provide the five specific benefits of being part of the covenant family. And all of that I thought, put us in a very unique position where we could understand how the covenant was enabled through the Moed Mikre so that these two things embrace one another and uphold the whole of God's plan and story. That was a lot. No one else had ever done that. However, to be fair, Pesach, Matzah, Makudim, and Shavuah are cerebral answers to questions that are essential to our existence and our relationship with Yahweh. But when we recognize the role of father and son in fulfilling them, and who Dod was, why he volunteered to do this, why Yahweh accepted it, how Yahweh foretold that this was going to happen on Mount Moriah in year 2000 Yah with Abraham and Yishak, and then had Dod write about all the things that he would experience 1,000 years before enduring it, and then to have Dod come back exactly 40 Obel or 2,000 years after that to fulfill Yom Kippurim and Sukkah, now all of a sudden these are celebrations of family.
Right.
Now this is God dealing with us as his family. This is our father and our spiritual mother enriching the lives of their children. That's an entirely different kind of an experience. You still have the cerebral knowledge of what's occurring, but but now it's grounded in the single most important aspect of this, which is family. And even as Pesach was celebrated for the first time in Mitzrayim, the family celebrated it together in their homes. Well, they were pretty humble homes as they were slaves, but it didn't matter because they were celebrating this with the creator of the universe.
Yes.
And they were about to go off on a three-day walk, as he would say, a three-day walk with him, Pesach, Matzah, and Makudim. It's one of the reasons why it's so frustrating to see Rabbinic Judaism talk about Passover being a seven-day holiday and that it it celebrates the history of Jews in Egypt. And that's not true. Pesach is the first day of Matzah. Matzah is the seven-day celebration. The third day of Chag Matzah is Bikurim. They are a three events that all work together as one, because you don't want to be eternal and not perfected because you're going to spend your eternity in hell. And being perfected but not having eternal life would be a complete waste of the sacrifice. And so to have both, to be perfected and to be eternal, only matters if you get to spend your eternity next to and around and in the home and family of Yahweh as his sons and daughters, just as we are reflections of the relationship Yahweh had with Dod. That's why with Moshe, you don't hear God speak emotionally to Moshe. With Moshe, it was a cerebral relationship. God says this. You know, Moshe says, I stutter, I'm slow of tongue. I don't want to do this. And Yahweh says, who do you think made that tongue? Do you think that since I made the tongue, I might be able to make it work for you? The whole thing was a cerebral discussion. You know, he says, who am I tell him is sent me? And God doesn't just give him his name. He says, you know, I am who I am. Asher, Haya, Asher. You know, Asher, the single most important relationship word, one of the most dynamic words in the whole of the Hebrew language. It's a verb. It's a noun. It's a proper noun. It's a preposition. It is so many things talking about the relationship that we form with Yahweh as part of the covenant. And Haya is the basis of Yahweh's name. It means I exist. And so he explained it before he answered it. And then you can see Haya and Yahweh's name. It was a cerebral relationship. God says, okay, I want to explain to you the nature of the covenant. I want to explain to you the nature of creation. Very scientific, intellectual explanation of creation. And for those who are saying, oh, well, it can't be. You said it was in 6 days and the universe is billions of years old. Yes. It says from the perspective of the creator that he created in 6 24-hour days. And all you need to do is look at the cosmic microwave radiation background from the Big Bang, where we know that time was stretched to 10 to the 12th power. Time is relative. It moves slower in the presence of great speed or great gravity, mass, or energy. And so the amount of energy at the impetus of the Big Bang, which the story was told, was stretched to 10 to the 12th power. All you have to do is take 14 billion years, divide that by 10 to the 12th power, and you have 6 24-hour days. So the creation account is specifically accurate in the order of events. It is an intellectual explanation. Even the flood is an intellectual explanation. God says it's going to start with an upwelling of deep sea water, and it's going to happen because of the Nephilim. And you'd look at the Nephilim and say that those who prostrate themselves, it is those who are political and religious and exceedingly vicious. And then he uses Hamas to explain the nature of those people, which means they're acting like terrorists. And so it's a cerebral explanation. Then God goes into to explaining the whole nature of the covenant experience with Abraham, and even the enactment of the covenant on Mount Moriah, and exactly how all of that was going to relate to his fulfillment with his son. By the way, how many days walk was it? Three.
Mm-hmm.
Took him 3 days to get there. Took Dode 3 days from the time that he arrived year 30 to 33 to fulfill Pesach. So, it was a cerebral explanation. And then he gets into the Moed Mikre, and each one is specifically explained. This is what I want you to prepare in terms of the meal. This is what these things represent. This is going to be the benefit of it. This is the timing of it. All cerebral explanations. Then comes Dode. It's personal. It's relational. He is my son. I'm his father. They're passionate. The Torah is a very intellectual book, particularly the book of Devarim. I mean, it just lays it out. This is what God said, and this is what it means, and this is how you're supposed to think about it. And it even has a test for you to determine who is and who's not a prophet. And one of the most amazing things about Devarim 18, where the test is, do you know what comes before that test?
What?
The prophecy of Dode's arrival. The first half of Devarim 18 is written specifically about Dode. He is the person who is of yourselves, who will be like me. And the entire prophecy, every word of it. There's only one person in human history that met those criteria, and it's Dode. It's a prophecy of Dode. And then because there were so many people who claimed to be prophets, like Muhammad and Paul, who turned out to be, and Akiva, turned out to be false prophets, right after the explanation of Dode's arrival, we have the explanation of what is, how you go about determining who's a false prophet. We used it to be able to expose and condemn the book of Ezekiel, for example. The books of Jonah is another example. The book of Job, they do not pass that test. The book of Esther does not pass that test. So this is a very cerebral, intellectual presentation, but it's not so when you read Dode. When you read Dode, it's filled with the first, second, and third person volition, just as this, choose the appropriate sacrifices, was written in the imperative. The imperative is the person you're speaking to's expression of volition. And it sometimes it has first and second person volition in the same statement. Sometimes it's first and third, speaking of Yahweh's will and desire, as well as his dotes. It's a very passionate tapestry, these mizmor that he wrote. They're very different than the Torah. And so once you when you put Dode into the seven Moed Mikre, they have an emotional, familial vibe to them and resonance to them to go along with the intellectual explanations that Moshe experienced. I mean, just think of Yahweh allowing his son to be tortured by the savagery that was Rome and then go into Sheol to take our guilt. I'm telling you, it hurt Yahweh a lot more than it hurt Dode.
Oh, I'm sure.
So this is what we're dealing with here, and that's what he's talking about here. He says, choose the appropriate sacrifices. Know what sacrifices are important. Pesach, Matzah, Bukurim. Those sacrifices are important because they lead to eternal life in the covenant family of Yahweh. While acknowledging Dode's contribution as essential, his sacrifice would have meant nothing without what Yahweh was able to accomplish as a result of it. If Yahweh hadn't explained it through Moshe, if he hadn't lived the purpose of it through Abraham, and then had Moshe detail it, then what Dode did to fulfill it wouldn't have mattered. No Abraham and covenant, doesn't matter. No Torah and Mikre, it doesn't matter. The sacrifice that Dode endured on Pesach, Matzah, Bukurim, and Shavuah mattered because of what God conveyed to Abraham and then conveyed through Moshe to set all of the explanations in place. Then he was fulfilling something that led to us being part of God's family. As we consider the landscape, it does not appear that there are currently many Jews who are clamoring for explanations, at least to the degree stipulated by what follows. And yet it is encouraging that Dode is predicting that it will occur, that there is going to be a very meaningful and joyful harvest. Now, I've come to the conclusion, again, I am extrapolating from numerous different places in the Torah and Prophets, that we're going to have somewhere in the range of 7,000 covenant members who are going to experience the Teruah harvest. And that between now and that time, which I think it'll be in 2029, which, you know, it's 2024 now, so we're only talking about 5 years, that over the next 5 years, that is the best that we as a covenant family are going to be able to achieve with this program, with the Yada Yah series of books, the Yada Yah website, the various and tremendous efforts to publicize it, D in social media, Steve and his many YouTube and other accounts, and all of the people, Steve, that do these things. Mike is helpful as well. What we're going to achieve is about 7,000, I think, that will be part of the Teruah harvest. Now, Elia is quite the gift of gab. And when we come back, we're not going to be normal. I'm not sure we're normal now, but we really are going to be exceptional. And we're going to be aided and abetted by Yahweh in a very big way. You know, it's one thing to be inspired by him so that you see things and you can share things that no one has ever seen or shared. It's another thing to be able to speak in every language of the world exceedingly forcefully. And if you tire of an argument because somebody is just not listening, to be able to incinerate them with your words. This is a very different situation. And above us is going to be a banner that Yahweh is going to uplift for the whole world to see. And we are going to be surrounded by Malach, so all the people that are trying to do us in are going to find that it just doesn't work out very well when you're doing Yahweh's work. And so it's going to be an exceptional experience. And I think we're going to be given some liberties, you know, like one of the liberties that I'm negotiating for right now is that I do not want to be anywhere near the Temple Mount while Al-Aqsa Mosque or the Dome of the Rock are there, or the various Roman Catholic shrines. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be there. I don't want to be around those things. They give me the creeps.
Right.
And so I want to destroy them. I know I'm not building a new temple, nor is Elia, but I would sure like a laser show that shows this is where it's going to be. And so there's a beautiful backdrop and no scar. And so I think that's a reasonable request. But I think that we're going to have fairly extraordinary capabilities. And the reason I share that is that 3.5 years later, I think the number of Yehudim and Goyim that are going to be in Yisrael excited to welcome Dod and Yahweh back, although we're going to all be crying our eyes out at this moment, but excited to welcome them back is going to be between 70 and 77,000. That's my...
Wonderful news.
Yeah, those are the numbers that I think make sense. So here's Mizmor Psalm 4:6. A great many. Rob, a very substantial number. Now, this is after you said, okay, I want you to understand the significance of the sacrifices. Well, we're now pointing to his return on Yom Kippurim. A great many will ask, is the one who will choose to reveal to us that is that which is good, useful, and beneficial? Who is the one who will choose to reveal to us what is good, beneficial, and useful? You and I want to lift up upon the light of your presence, Yahweh. Now, lots of different ways to interpret this. My favorite is that at this point in time, we are the ones who are sharing with Yisrael and Yehudim that which is useful, good, and beneficial pursuant to the sacrifices and Dod's role in them. So a great many will ask, who is the one who will choose to reveal to us that which is good, beneficial, and useful? I think this is the reason that God has hundreds of prophecies speaking of the specific role we are playing. He wants Jews to know it. He wants them to know why God chose to witness to them through this individual and to those covenant members around him. You and I want you to lift up upon us the light of your presence, Yahweh. So what is this individual and the covenant family working with them conveying about these sacrifices? Is that Dod is the fulfillment of them, and that as a result, Yahweh's light and his presence will come upon his people. So what we're learning and sharing is going to contribute to this period of enlightenment, after all. By being a lone voice, the singular herald, sharing the good and beneficial message must be prior to the two witnesses. So this is Dode looking at what's going to happen prior to his return. He didn't, let me tell you something. Dode's a prophet. He volunteered to fulfill the most important prophecies in human history. And Yahweh showed him exactly what was going to happen. Now, we read in the prior Mizmor of Dode asking the question, you know, how long are they going to be mistaken about what I've done? So he knows that humankind created three religions that all go about replacing him with a myth.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he's not going to make that sacrifice unless he knows that somehow it's going to count in the end. And so he's a prophet. God showed him how it finally resonates. He's showed him that somebody is going to finally figure out that he did fulfill these sacrifices and explain why he did it, when he did it, and what he's returning to celebrate the benefit. Dode saw all of it. He knows exactly what we're doing and why we're doing it and the result of us doing this. And that's why there are so many prophecies, actually beginning in the Torah with the first, Moshe, even before he goes on the mission to liberate God's people, speaking of the role that we would play, and then running all the way through the Mizmor and through the prophets. So it is, in fact, the first really blunt, in-your-face, undeniable prophecy is by Dode's son, Solomon. And it happened to be coterminous with the commencement of address, the real Sermon on the Mount, the day that Yahweh's covenant home was completed and given to all Yisrael about the Nakri. I am very specific about the role that we're playing. And then the greatest of the prophets, Yashayah, he was not the greatest man who was a prophet, that would be Moshe, but the greatest of the prophets is Yashayah, and he spoke vociferously in the 11th chapter. The entire 11th chapter is on this specific role. So Dode knew what we're going to do, and he knew it was going to make a difference, and it was going to prepare Yisrael for this opportunity, because I do think there's a significant part of what we're doing now that's actually going to also play into the time of the two witnesses from Jerusalem. I'm convinced that there's aspects of what we have cited from Yahweh in these books that are going to be lifted up on the sign for the world to read. It goes on to say, Dode is expecting a harvest, it reads. You have offered and provided great joy in my heart, more than the time their multiplying grain and their new wine will abound, increasing significantly, Rabab. So you have offered and provided, Nathan. Now that's an interesting verb, because do you know of anybody named Nathan?
Yeah,
I do.
Mm-hmm.
He appointed Dode.
Yeah, single most important prophecy in our
mission. Well, not appointed, but helped
Dode. Nathan, Nathan was a prophet. And he was a go-between there for a while between Dode and Yahweh when Dode had some hiccups and Yahweh was dealing with, you know, how fathers have to have timeouts with sons every once in a while to get their attention. And they were having a little timeout.
Samuel 7 was Nathan, right? The cornerstone stuff.
Nathan is the guy that relayed what is the single most important prophecy and the as it relates to Yada Yahweh, because it explains exactly what Yahweh was doing, building a house and home for his son, and how his son is going to serve as the King of Kings, and how this is all going to transpire from 3,000 years ago, 1,000 BCE, all the way to year 2033 CE, which is year 6,000. Yeah, it's all laid out by Nathan as a prophet communicating for Yahweh in 2 Samuel 7. You have offered and provided, Nathan, great joy, happiness, and a desire to rejoice. That's really all we have ever asked for. Well, I'll say it's all I've ever asked for. I want Yahweh happy with the results of Yom Kippur. I just do. That's my life is dedicated to a singular thing. I mean, that might sound awfully simplistic, but it just is. I want Yahweh happy with the results of Yom Kippur. I realize that it is a battle against Islam. It's a battle against Christianity. It's a battle against Judaism. It's a battle against progressives. To get the ear of God's people, to earn their trust, such that they come to learn about Yahweh, what he's offering and expecting in return, and that they're there to celebrate the ultimate family reunion. We're the only ones calling Yisrael home to this event and only one calling them away from rabbinic Judaism and progressive mythology, as well as from Christianity, and to keep them safe from Islam, such that we can get their attention and that they're there on that day. And so if there's no one there, then we lose. Then there's nothing for Yahweh to come back to. Then he has a prophecy that's not fulfilled. Satan wins. And so we're up against, fortunately, a dunderhead. Satan is having just recently translated the Quran. I can tell you that Satan is really dumb, and he's inept. So we're not exactly fighting against superpowers here. But that's the foe we're up against. He needs a shutout. He needs to win it all. All Jews have to be either dead or estranged from God. And we only need, technically, two to prevail and be there. A Yehudim, a Yehud, and a Yisraelite. But that's not going to please Yahweh. He didn't go through all of this for two. And he's never been impressed with numbers. He would have been happy with just Adam. He would have been happy with just Dote in terms of a relationship. But Dote is coming back to a wonderful family reunion, and I think there's going to be 70 or 77,000 people there. And I think Yahweh and Dote are going to be pleased with that. And if they're pleased with it, then we get the ultimate reward, the greatest reward you could possibly have, knowing we gave it our best effort, and we did something that brought great joy to Father and Son. That's a life well lived. And so that is every day at 5 o'clock, I get up to go do this. That's my motivation, is I want Yahweh happy with this result. I want his son elated with this result. And we know that we're very reliant on both of them to make this happen. But we are making our contribution, and we want it to resonate and result in this way. And this is a wonderful affirmation of that.
Mm-hmm.
You have afforded and provided great joy. So he's saying, you know, they're going to ask, who is this person that is doing this? And then the next statement is, you have offered and provided great joy. And my heart, which means, and from my way of thinking, the way I've analyzed this, the way that as I exercise good judgment about what's occurring here, this result makes me happy. You know, we just come out of Dode being utterly frustrated that humankind has perverted and corrupted and replaced his great sacrifice and spit on it. And now he's saying, no, at the end, I'm going to be happy about this. And I'm more delighted than they're multiplying grain and their new wine will abound, increasing significantly. Sometimes I'm criticized just for it's a little thing, and I don't want to come across as defensive here because I'm really not defensive, but I like to point out the reasons that I make certain choices. I always include with Pesach not just the lamb, but also the matzah, because I view that Pesach is correctly the first day of unyeasted bread, so we always have the matzah, and I always serve a glass of wine. And I've had people say, why are you mentioning the wine? It's not listed in the ingredients that Moshe presents for Pesach. Oh, here you go. What's with the grain? The wine. So you've got, I think, all three things at Pesach and Matzah. The wine represents the bloodshed by that Passover lamb. And he bled for us.
I view it as fruit of the vine poured out.
Yes, and fruit of the vine, absolutely. And number two is that olive oil that has been spiced with the bitter herbs represents our spiritual mother, the Ruach Kodesh, and the role she plays and this whole process as we become God's sons and daughters. And what is the grain? The grain is the third of those ingredients that must be crushed to be of value. The grain represents the unyeasted bread, which is not only the body, but it also then represents the removal of the yeast, because it's just the grain in this case, the removal of the yeast, which represents religious and political corruption. So all of these elements are together. And he says they will abound, increasing significantly. Rabab. They're going to be numerous. They're going to be abundant. And Dode is thrilled. Now, if you can do something in your life that causes the single most important person in God's world to be happy and to write about it, that's a good life.
You're kidding.
What we're doing is important. So this is very encouraging because it strongly suggests that we'll be an abundance of people gathered for that final harvest when Dode returns on Yom Kippurim. In context, it also indicates that this will be the result of the enlightenment that Yahweh is providing through his final witness. And if so, our Messiah is pleased. Now, for those listening who are Israelites and you think, wait a minute, coming back on Yom Kippurim, that's a day of affliction, you know, that's where we deny ourselves, that's when we twirl chickens above our heads. No.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Respond.
Kippur. By the way, I figured out something on Kippur that was fairly insightful for me. The enemy of Satan. Satan is, Allah is Satan. What is the word that he uses throughout the Quran and Hadith to describe his enemy, those he wants to have Muslims slaughter and kill so that he can torture forever?
I know off the top of my head, and I've been reading.
It is kafir. What is kafir? It is the basis of Yom Kippurim. Kafir is those who have been reconciled. This is the day of reconciliation, the thing that Satan is the most opposed to are those who are going to be there waiting for Yahweh to return on Yom Kippurim. Yom Kippurim is not a day of affliction. It is a day of reconciliation. It's the great homecoming when Yahweh and Dode are coming home to a reconciled relationship with Yisrael and Yehudim. And that is Satan's enemy, the kafar, and throughout the Quran and Hadith. I thought that was one of my favorite insights of the week.
That's rich.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so
I think that's
day,
why Ezekiel talked about eating you, was you're helping to facilitate that, you know, which Hashatan doesn't want.
Yep. By the way, the Quran also speaks of cannibalism.
Yeah, it does.
And it also speaks of drinking blood. And the Feast of the Beast, Ezekiel is Satan's autobiography in his playbook. It's exactly what he intends to do. It's got 25 different ways to kill Jews. The Quran took that to greater lengths and has even more ways to kill and torture Jews. But that's how Satan wins. If Satan can either kill or terrorize, stigmatize every Jew so that there are none waiting for Yahweh upon his return, then Yahweh doesn't return and Satan gets to stay out of Sheol, because there'd be no reason to send him into Sheol if there's no one here to have a relationship with. So that is our ultimate battle. That's why rewriting Prophet of Doom as goddamn religion and explaining that to God's people is so essential. The entire thing. Satan's big deal is his day of doom, the day of resurrection. The last day. Well, his last day is Yom Kippur.
Mm-hmm.
He can't tell anybody when it is. I can tell you. Yom Kippur, 2033.
Yeah.
And it's that day that he's trying to destroy and to kill all of the kafir, all of those who are reconciled, because it's the reconciled in among Yehudim who are going to be there on Yom Kippur to witness Dod's return with Yahweh. And Yahweh, and I think it's Zechariah 12, is very explicit in saying that the one he's associated with as he returns is going to have been pierced, and he is an only son, and that the Yehudim are going to look up to God's only and beloved son, his firstborn, whom they pierced, and weep for him as you'd weep for an only child. It's powerful when you know who the players are, isn't it? And and how this all transpired.
This is a deism, so I hope you don't mind me saying, but I have told you I think you are the bull of Bikurim and the bull of Shabuah, and Eliyahu would be the goat, in my opinion. I know that doesn't mesh with everything you've said, but when you talk about approaching with the proper sacrifices, and we realize who the lamb is, someone, but the bull and the goat are facilitating this up leading up to Yom Kippurim, and the entire menu is the plan of Yahweh's bringing home his people. It's a really beautiful metaphor.
Yeah, it is, and of course that is part of Kippurim, because Dod is the one who Zechariah 4 is describing. Is going to be dressed in the priestly robes, dressed as Dod is going to be the one that anoints the mercy seat of the Ark of the Covenant. The Ark of the Covenant is going to be brought out, and Dod is literally going to anoint it, which is how reconciliation takes place on Yom Kippurim.
Mm-hmm.
It hasn't happened since, you know, shortly after Dod, and that is going to happen exactly that way, and there will be the bull and the lamb. And
they sign it as witnesses.
Yeah, and in this particular case, you know, you look at personalities. I'm a very bullish personality.
You are the bull.
Yeah, I've
sure.
I have no issue with that. And plus the fact, if God's going to choose a metaphor, chances are it has some resonance. And you know, I've long realized this was once God began to explain who he was going to use and why he was going to do so, and trying to awaken his people to this realization. Mm-hmm. You finally, as they say, you put on your big boy pants and you deal with what you're reading. And the bull metaphor does make some sense. And it also makes some sense in that as that second witness at that time, primary witness now, one of two witnesses then, one of those two witnesses is Yehud, the other one's not. And And so you would not be representing the Lamb. You're witnessing to the Lamb, but you could not be presented as a sheep or a lamb because I'm goy. And yeah, and so this would make sense in this particular case. So grain, as we know, is symbolic of saved souls, while wine conveys the price paid to ransom them. Over the centuries, very few have been counted among those in Yah's storehouse, but this will soon change. And you know, all three of the metaphors that Yahweh uses speaks of people who have been crushed. If you haven't been challenged, you have no character. You know, Dee, we were talking about some of the challenges you were facing in your life now, and I have gone through mine. And Kirk, you have gone through yours. If you haven't faced a challenge, particularly in your family, then you're not prepared to understand what God is dealing with Yisrael, how God relates to his people. You gotta, and you don't have the character to stand up. And, you know, it's not everybody's idea of fun to have 10,000 death threats because you're so bold in telling people the truth that they don't want to hear. And to me, that's I have no issue with that. So you develop a sense of confidence from having been put in a difficult situation and come through it. You know, how are you going to talk to people who are depressed, which is going to happen to every Jew as they're hunted around the world, unless you have been depressed and you know how to beat it? And, you know, I learned when, you know, it was a couple of month, 3 month period where I was really depressed. I had lots of reason to be. And I found out there is a way to beat it. And the way to beat it is to make your life matter. Is stop worrying about what happened to you and to start focusing on what you can do to make life better in a way that is meaningful for others.
And absolutely.
It is the ultimate fix. You don't need any drugs. I never took any drugs. You don't need any drugs.
Yeah.
The ultimate means of resolving these problems is to get out of yourself and get into the opportunity that makes a difference. And if you can make a difference for God's people, if you can do something that makes God himself smile, if you can do something that brings joy to our Savior and to our King, then that's a very worthy endeavor.
Truly, yeah.
Yeah.
Gives me purpose, I know that.
Yes. So at the conclusion of the time of Jacob's trouble, as Dodes return, the number of saved souls represented by this harvest of grain and new wine in that vineyard. Where's the vineyard? What is? Dode planted a vineyard with Yahweh.
Right there.
And that vineyard is going to bear fruit. That's why the vineyard is there.
Yep.
The reason that the grain is there is, what does the grain symbolize? Chag Matzah.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all here for our edification. So the number of Yehudim, Yisraelites, that are going to embrace Yahweh and be there for the return is going to grow as hundreds become thousands and thousands become tens of thousands. Now, should anyone think that one in a million among 8 billion people isn't a significant number to impress a king, Yahweh was satisfied with the two in the garden. He was happy with the 8 on the ark. Abraham and Sarah made him laugh. With one son, Yishak, he made a covenant. Jacob's 12 sons started a family. We were made in God's image, and the human family are typically small. So I'm here to tell you that God would be happy with a handful of sons and daughters. But our experience and his experience and the benefit of Dode's tremendous sacrifice is so much better if they're tens of thousands. Eternity is a long time. We're going to want a marvelous family with lots of different proclivities and attributes and abilities. So the parameters associated with this next statement are more indicative of the Messiah's second coming rather than his third. It reads, reconciled and in peace. Shalom. Salvation, satisfaction, the most favorable circumstances, lacking nothing, having been treated fortuitously, and now content, friendship, and tranquility, the relationship harmonious and affirmed, together and as one. I want to lie down and stretch out and relax and be at rest. You know, I don't think it was possible for Dode, from the time that Yahweh anointed him at 8 years old to the time that he came back and fulfilled Pesach and Matzah, for him to be at rest. I think that with both of the two great Zeruah, with Moshe and Dode, Yahweh got the most out of those two men that humanity can offer. In fact, I think that both of them, by the end of their lives, were spent. And I think that in Dode's case, it wasn't just that he had lived an exceedingly full life and had fought 66 battles to defend God's people and had written 100 Mizmor and Mashal Proverbs. It was that he knew that he had done so many things that he could have done better, and that he had this wonderful opportunity to fulfill Pesach and Matzah, but he knew it was going to be agonizing to do so. And I don't think he really rested until it was over. And so I think when he finally fulfilled those, that he finally says, all right, now it's just a matter of trusting the legacy of prophecies that we have left behind and this covenant family that's going to arise in the last days to call our people home so that there's a wonderful harvest on this day. So I think he is at rest now. And I don't even think he was at rest really until he foresaw what it was that we were going to do with his words to awaken his people and bring them back home. Indeed, this is because you alone, Yahweh, with absolute certainty, will cause and enable me to live, dwelling in a particular place during a certain period of time. So Dodithi was, during his life, knew that Yahweh was going to bring him back, that he was going to dwell for a certain period of time, that it was going to be associated with the grain and the vine, the wine, therefore Pesach and Matzah, that it was going to be part of an enormous sacrifice, and that when that was done, he would be at rest because he knew with absolute certainty that Yah was going to cause it to happen. And even here, this particular statement was written, you will cause and enable me to live, dwelling in a particular place during a certain period of time. Yashab Ani. You will cause me to re-inhabit this place, to establish a dwelling with me by restoring me such that I'm more like you, Hifal imperfect. God is acting upon Dode so that he will be reestablished to restore life such that father and son become ever more alike.
That's beautiful.
It's powerful, isn't it? It's all there, laid out for us, waiting for us to capitalize, waiting for us to share. And you know, I want to make this point really clear. Over the 3,000 years between the time that Dode wrote these words and the time that we're speaking to you this evening,
mm-hmm.
no one, not a single person, has recognized what we're sharing with you. And it is one thing for us to finally figure it out. And I don't want to claim that there was anything special about figuring it out. There really wasn't. It was blatantly there. It was right in our faces. It could not have been more obvious. In fact, it was so obvious that no one saw it. So I'm not taking credit for finding it because it was really obvious. But the thing that matters is the sharing it with conviction. To be in a place where we could write about it in a book that explains why it matters. You know, after writing volumes upon volumes upon volumes about the terms and conditions of the covenant and how they are fulfilled, and then writing about each of the seven Moed Mikre and what they represent and how and when they are fulfilled, and then to read how Dode has stated that he's going to be the living embodiment of this, and have all of those books ready to support all of it. So you've got the entire house built, and now you're turning on the light on the inside and saying, this is what the party that Yahweh was inviting you to. And the entire grand home and edifice is already constructed, with every aspect of it visible to be seen and read and understood. That's what makes this so special. And then to be able to so confidently, so boldly share it with God's people. And then to have so much of it coalesce. This beautiful presentation of the website, the rewrite of all these books and how collectively mm-hmm. they serve as a singular family. The ability yeah. to even go back and rewrite goddamn religion such that it now becomes probably the best book to give an open-minded, non-religious, non-political Jew. Because yeah. it walks them through to say, mm-hmm. here is where you are. Here is why you are here. Here is what you must accept and understand if you're going to survive these next 10 years. And to give them enough to say, listen, if this guy learned all of this and invested all of this time and took the risk to tell me this and explain how it all fits into Yahweh's testimony, I think I need to read the rest of what he had to share with me. And I want to go on the same journey. And that's where we find ourselves. And that's why this mizmor and this line is so important. It's about the passion to which it is shared, and the enthusiasm to herald Dode's return and his role. So it is through context and by making the connections that we come to understand. So let's reassess where we have been. And as we do this, we're going to stop broadcasting, but so many of our listeners tonight are on the phone. And they will continue to be able to listen, and this will continue to record and become part of the archive of this show. So we're just going to go right through the transition from broadcasting to recording.
Mm-hmm.
So in context, if we were to reassess where we have been, Dode began this song by revealing that a very troubling time of confinement was approaching for him and for Israel, both. He is the living embodiment of Israel, and that confinement that he would endure on Matzah is the same confinement they will endure as we move forward in the time of Jacob's troubles, which even Tsar, the word for troubles, means to confine, which is going to happen when the two-state solution is imposed.
Cool.
And in both cases, those who are invited to be called out for having been correct will be afforded a vast and expansive dwelling place. The seven dimensions of heaven and the six dimensions of the universe. This is the result of Yahweh fortuitously listening to Dode's request to intervene and resolve the issues spoiling the relationship. Now, as much as I want to give Dode credit for figuring out that this was the best way for him to earn our respect in eternity and to be an effective leader of God's people for all time, and also for him to resolve the issues really of his own family and son and his people, he didn't come up with it entirely on his own.
Nope.
Dode was a student of the Torah. He wrote the 119th Mizmor, where he took each of the 22 letters in the Hebrew alphabet and explained the Torah alphabetically with eight statements based on each of the 22 letters. Dode figured out what we figured out. He's much smarter than I am. And so if I figured out that what Abraham and Yitzhak were doing on Mount Moriah represented the fulfillment of Passover by the beloved Son of God, I can guarantee you.
Me too.
Dode figured it out.
Yeah.
And so all that was left for Dode to do to say it was to say, you know, I get it. It's the right,
yeah.
It's the right call. I want to do this. And that's what context provides. So cognizant of the magnitude of what Father and Son are offering, Dode asks, how long and for what reason will humankind negate and disavow his gift? Disrespecting and devaluing what he has accomplished, he calls the religious misappropriations and replacement worthless myths, Judaism, Christianity, Islam, total fantasies based upon irrational lies and deceptive misconceptions. He's speaking of the unknown Mashiach of Chabad and the mythical Jesus Christ of Christianity. By contrast, Dode asserts that it's essential to understand that Yahweh has dealt with him differently than anyone else. The realization that he, as Yahweh's chesed, steadfastly loyal and magnanimous one, has been replaced and disavowed by religious myths so astonishing and perturbing that we should be sufficiently agitated that we're provoked to anger, lest we too miss the way and mislead. That's one of the beauties of goddamn religion. It provokes us to anger.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't love. You can't protect a family unless you are disgusted by those things which are threatening to it,
mm-hmm.
including genocide of God's people. So we are asked to exercise good judgment and to declare these realizations, continuing to do so for as long as we are awakened to this profound and transformative truth. And in this case, it's the single most valuable discovery in human history. And not only did the covenant's terms and conditions get explained by the discussions that Yahweh had with Abraham, knowing that there's five benefits and five conditions, and that it was all explained as to how it was going to be enabled on Mount Moriah 4,000 years ago. But that Dode explained his role in fulfilling Pesach, Matzah, Bukkudim, and Shabuah so that we would understand how God was going to deliver these benefits. Single most important discovery in human history. Because there's only one way out of this experience alive that is worth taking, and that's to benefit from the covenant and what Doe did to enable us to be part of God's eternal family. This understanding that his body would serve as the Pesach El, as his soul removed the fungus of religious rebellion during Matzah, represent the sacrifices that we should confidently trust and rely for our vindication with Yahweh. However, the realization that Dode has done so would remain unknown until this writing 10 years prior to his triumphal return. Acknowledging that there would eventually be a yearning for the truth, Dode reveals that many will come to ask, who is this one who will choose to reveal that which is so beneficial to us? At which time the prophet acknowledges that Yahweh will enlighten those who seek to be in his presence. Dode's going to enlighten some too, because he's coming back as brilliant as the sun.
Light him up.
The realization that there will be a great harvest with a number of saved souls and that increasing exponentially stills Dode's soul, causing the one who sacrificed so much for us to rejoice. And it is in this context that we approach the prophet's concluding statement, announcing reconciliation and salvation as a result of Father and Son being in one accord in this matter. So Dode is ready to lie down and rest for a while, knowing that Yahweh will, with absolute certainty, cause him to live again, brought back to this place at the right time to provide reconciliation and salvation. Reconciled with Yahweh over what they had decided he would accomplish during Chag Matzah, and again on Yom Kippurim, Father and Son were in complete agreement. Dode could rest, content that his soul would be awakened and would live for this day. Together, they would reestablish a home for Father and Son, for Yahweh and Yisrael, for the covenant family. Consider this declaration your invitation to join them. It was written by Dode on your behalf. The realization that Dode was speaking of his nefesh soul being revived to serve in this capacity is made evident by the fact that he has dispensed writing in the first person singular, masculine, because our consciousness is feminine. Isn't that interesting? He's giving us a different perspective of who he is at this moment. By way of making the connections to understand exactly what Dode was describing and Mizmor 4:8. We don't have to go far because he explained the connection between Shakab, relaxed, and Yesen, slept, in Mizmor 3:5. So, to understand it, let's return to Mizmor 3 for a moment. It reads, okay. A Mizmor song of Dode, the beloved, upon his fleeing from the presence of Absalom, reconciling father, his son. Yahweh, what is the extent and why the increasing number of my adversaries and troubles, and of me being confined and harassed? A great many rise up against me. The preponderance of the people are saying, of my soul, there is no salvation for him or through him with God. Pause and consider this. You, Yahweh, are a shield all around me and a source of my deliverance, my manifestation of power, my attribution of status, and the one raising my head first and foremost from the beginning. I communicated audibly, calling out to and summoning Yahweh, and he answered me from his set-apart mountain. Pause now and consider. I relaxed and fell asleep, and I will awaken revived and productive because Yahweh sustains and supports me. By the way, he didn't say I'd be reborn. He said, I will arrive or be revived, productive, ready to go. Children are not productive. Adults are.
There you go.
Yeah.
I will not revere or fear the great multitude of people who from all around have set themselves against me. Your desire and my life and my will, I should say, your desire and my will is for you to take a stand because it is my choice and your decision to encourage, to be supportive, establishing Yahweh. You want to liberate and deliver me because it's your will to save me, causing me to be victorious, becoming a savior like yourself, my God. For indeed, you will strike accordingly all those who are adverse to and oppose me, crushing the jawbone and teeth of the unrighteous and unjust who mislead. Approach Yahweh for the salvation of your family and for the benefit, for your benefit. Pause now and consider this. Mizmor 3:1 through 3:8. Dode, therefore, was not lying down to sleep in his grave, as the New Testament authors, particularly Paul, have claimed.
Mm-hmm.
There would be a restful intermission between his first and second coming because what he would come to accomplish would be so monumental, it would change humankind's standing with God. Dode's second coming as our Savior would be agreed upon and profoundly important. Again, making the connection to understand, there is a remarkable reference to resting in conjunction with the Dode and the 127th Mizmor. And it begins, a song for those who think about ascending, by Solomon. If Yahweh is not building the house, the labor of those building it is worthless and in vain. If Yahweh is not paying attention to and watching over the city, the observant watchman is futile. There is no value for you to rise up too soon and take a stand prematurely, continuing to live, lingering, and remaining by consuming the bread of burdensome toil. This is because he provides for his beloved a time of rest. Behold, an inalienable inheritance for the role which has been assigned for Yahweh's children as a reward, even for recompense, the fruit of the womb. So here we have Solomon saying that whole explanation of who builds houses and what they're built for, we can't build a house for Yahweh unless Yahweh is part of that construction. If Yahweh is not paying attention to, which he is not right now, Jerusalem, doesn't matter how strong the IDF is. It is of no value to make the pronouncements about Dode's return prematurely. And this is because he provides for his beloved a time of rest. And that ultimately it is Dode who's going to have the inheritance for the role that he has been assigned for Yahweh's children. It's the ultimate reward, even recompense. Mm-hmm. It is the ultimate fruit of the womb. The fruit of the womb, new life. Being born anew. Being born into the covenant family. So Yahweh is building the enduring family home with his son. All other attempts are in vain. Like I told you, I want to raise the Dome of the Rock and Al-Aqsa Mosque. I want to completely remove from vision all of the corruption of religion. While Elia and I are in Jerusalem during those last 3.5 years, I did not say that I was going to build the temple. I would like, you know, with lasers, with light, you can make the appearance of so you'll know exactly where it's going to be and that it's beautiful. But, you know, with like a laser, you don't want to walk through it. So this is where it's going to be. And I'm going to speak to you recognizing it's going to be rebuilt on that place. And it will be comprised of light. But let's get rid of that hideous piece of crap that is the Dome of the Hooky print and the most disgusting shrine in the history of shrines, a trophy to Islam's decadence, the Al-Aqsa Mosque. Let's prepare the site so when Dode returns, it isn't so hideously ugly.
That would be nice. I'm sick of looking at it.
Yeah, I'm tired of looking at it. I don't want to have to be there with it being as a backdrop, and they don't want to have to return with that piece of garbage, either of them or any of the religious rubbish there. But yes, they're going to have an earthquake. Yes, there's going to be a flowing river. Yes, it's going to clean everything out. But why not start a little bit of urban renewal?
Iran almost blew it up.
Yeah,
I wish those few bombs had gotten
through.
Oh,
I know, with all of those rockets, yeah, they were flying right over it. I just kept on saying, oh, you idiots, if it's going to land.
Yeah,
let them fall. You know, one of the things that's so sad is that it appears fairly evident that the United States military orchestrated that attack from Iran. And it's not the first time that we have done that. And that we not only did it with Iran, we went through Russia, using Russia as a proxy to arrange the response so that Iran could show, okay, we've responded to the assassination of the chief designer, funder, and engineer of what happened on October 7th. And but the United States orchestrated it. Yep. So we took credit for saving Israel. We're disgusting.
Wow.
So God's timing was articulated from beginning. So being a herald out of sync with the fulfillment of the Mikra would be worthless. You know, we started this 22, almost 23 years ago. We've got 10 years to go, 9 years to go. I mean, 32 years all total. That's not a very long time, but I've worked at this 10, 12 hours a day, 6, 7 days a week over that period of time. So it took all of that time, and it's going to take every bit of the time we have left to get this job done. But the timing is the right timing according to this Mizmor, and to have done it earlier wouldn't have made any difference. We are in sync with the fulfillment of the Mikra. And to have engaged in this process without being specifically called out and invited to do it and then empowered by Yahweh, according to the Mizmor, would in fact be a waste of time, which is why both Solomon explains how Yahweh is going to use what we're doing and inspire what we're doing, and while Yashaya devotes an entire chapter to the seven spirits of Yahweh enabling this. So after a good long rest, God's solution to what ails the human condition, separating mankind from God, will be provided by his beloved. His inalienable inheritance is a reward, not only for him, but for all of us. And it has been assigned as a reward now for all of Yahweh's children. And it will come via the womb of a woman, because unto us a child was born, unto us a son is given. In his first life, a child was born. The first life, a child was born. In the second, a son was given.
That proves your
the sun's not given in the third. Dode comes back as the King of Kings. His life is not being offered to us. Third, he is our king. He is our shepherd.
Mm-hmm.
He is our savior. The sun was given for us in the second. A child was born in the first. A son was given in the second. And from Yahweh's perspective, Dode could be 30, and he is still a son. Dode could be 1,000, and from God's perspective, as his father, he is still his son. He will always be his son.
Wow. That
That's pretty cool. Wow.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, no, I'm
a child was born.
Yeah.
On a son on our behalf is given. Those are the first two. And then what does it say about that son? What it says, everything about that son is about his third arrival. And Yeshayah 9, it's all about his third arrival.
Yeah.
And this is the same prophecy that is so beautifully echoed in Devarim 18. Since Yahweh has done such a remarkable job explaining Mizmor 4:8, we'll leave it at that and we'll move on to our final review. May we all benefit from these inspiring words, and I'm going to share the fourth Mizmor, and that'll be the end of our program this evening. It's a Mizmor of Dode the Beloved. To the enduring leader accompanied by string instruments. With regard to my announcement to be called out, to be invited and welcomed while reading and reciting aloud. Answer me, Almighty God, of my vindication and of me being right. In the event of troubling confinement, when the area is narrowed and constrained, you have provided a breadth of opportunities for me, including vastly expanding my dwelling place along with providing ample relief for me. You have chosen to favor me and to be merciful to me, and so you decided to listen to my reasonable request to intervene. Sons of men, offspring of mankind, for how long will my significance, honor, and valuable reward, my enormous contribution, deserved respect, and tremendous gift, my dignity and reputation and status, be depreciated and devalued, be dishonored and insulted? Will you choose to continually love, preferring to romanticize vain delusions which have no basis in fact, worthless myths and total fantasies, seeking the irrational lies and deceptive misconceptions pertaining to false gods? Pause now and contemplate this. By the way, now I have my lead-in for the rewrite of Questioning Paul as Twistianity. You want to explain what really happened and how he is exceedingly disappointed at the falsification of what he has done and the false religions that grew out of his sacrifice? This is it. Of your own volition, come to know and understand that truly Yahweh has distinguished and will deal differently with the steadfastly loyal and magnanimous one, the set-apart one who is realistic, compassionate, and authentic, the Chesed, unto himself and on his behalf. Yahweh listens when I call out to him. Of your own accord, you should be agitated and angry, astonished, anguished, deeply perturbed and provoked. And yet don't miss the way, be mistaken or mislead. Choose to declare your conscience based upon your intellect and thus from the heart, exercising good judgment continually until you lie down. And then rest knowing you achieved what you could. Pause now and contemplate this. choose the appropriate sacrifices honestly, accurately, and fairly to be vindicated, and put all your confidence and trust in Yahweh. A great many will ask, who is the one who will choose to reveal to us that which is good, useful, productive, and beneficial? You and I want you to lift up upon us the light of your presence, Yahweh. You have offered and provided great joy in my heart, more than the time their multiplying grain and their new wine will abound, increasing significantly. Reconciled and in peace with salvation, in the most favorable circumstance, together and as one, in a unifying reciprocal agreement, I want to lie down and stretch out and relax and be at rest. Indeed, this is because you alone, uniquely, to the exclusion of all others, withdrew and set apart Yahweh with absolute certainty and without risk or vulnerability. Yourself will cause and enable me to live, dwelling in this particular place during that certain period of time. That is the fourth Mizmor. What a treat for the eyes, for the ears, for the mind.
Yes.
When this is read in conjunction with the first three Mizmor, Father and Son have made their plans known to us, and they are transformational. It is
the greatest
treasure ever shared. And you know, when I say that no one should be given credit for figuring it out, because it was right there, presented clearly to us. All we had to do was render the words accurately and come to know them, yada, and then be in, make the connections to understand being said. As these four Mizmor tell the story of Dode coming to realize that he had the opportunity to do something that was more important than what any human had ever done. Fulfill the Moed Mikre and enable the benefits of the covenant and the reunion of God's people. And he did.
Yes.
And he told us all about it. And so did his son. And so did Yashaya, the greatest of the prophets. And so we celebrate what Father and Son have done. We celebrate the covenant. It's five conditions and five benefits. And I've shared with you what the five benefits of the covenant are. There are five conditions. The five conditions are also benefits for us. The first is to disassociate from Babylon, where religion and politics were first integrated, where truth and lies were mingled together to confuse and to confound. Walk away from your country, from the association with human cultures and human nations, politics and religion, and then walk to Yahweh and allow him to perfect us through what Father and Son have done, particularly on matzah. Trust and rely on Yahweh and not on the IDF, not on the Likud political party, not upon the rabbis. Trust and rely upon Yahweh. Come to closely examine and carefully consider the terms and conditions of this covenant relationship is the fourth condition to be part of God's family. And then he asks us as parents to circumcise our sons on the eighth day so that they remember Zakar and we remember to raise our children to be part of God's family. And whether our children are those who are listening to us as adults around the world, particularly Jews, or they are our natural born children, that is what circumcision is all about. It's about making this separation at the point that life is conceived, to be distinct, to be special, to be set apart unto Yahweh. Those are the five terms and conditions of the covenant. The first of them is the one requirement. We must do it before God will even give us the time of day, before he will even allow us to begin to engage in a conversation with him, which is to walk away from religion and politics. You cannot be a progressive Jew and be part of that remnant who's going to celebrate Yahweh's return with Dode. You cannot be a religious Jew and be part of that remnant. The first requirement is to disassociate from those things. And the second is to recognize there's only one we can trust, which Dode has been emphasizing this from the beginning. It's Yahweh. And it is the four Moed Mikre that were fulfilled by Dode in year 4000 Yah, 33 CE, Pesach, Matzah, Bukodim, and Shavuah, that provide the five benefits of the covenant, where we become immortal, living forever. Where Dode on Matzah removed the guilt from us, the representing the yeast, taking it with him on his soul into Sheol to deposit it there, never to be seen again, making us appear perfect in God's eyes because all of our guilt has been removed. Such that on firstborn children, Bukodim, we become part of God's family, just as Dode celebrated his release from Sheol and reunion with his father. Such that seven sevens later, we are enriched and we are empowered. This is the day also that the Torah was revealed to Moshe. And we are enlightened by God's teaching and his guidance. That's why when the covenant is renewed on this day, year 6000 Yah, as the sun sets October 2nd, 2033 in Jerusalem, at the fulfillment of Yom Kippurim, Yahweh will place his Torah guidance inside of us. It becomes literally part of the fabric of our lives. And this is how the covenant is renewed and reaffirmed, enlightening us, teaching us, guiding us forevermore. This is the fulfillment of the Moed Mikre. It's what they represent. It is how the covenant's benefits were fulfilled. It's how the Bereth and the Mikre work together. It's how father and son work together, because Dode is the living embodiment of the covenant, and he was the fulfillment of the invitations to meet with God. It is one cohesive story, and it is told brilliantly through the Mizmor. And that's why it is so wonderful that of all the books that were saved for us to read amongst the Dead Sea Scrolls, there are more of the Psalms than any other. The single longest scroll, most complete, is the Great Psalm Scroll. It is also the one that is the most different from the Masoretic text, because the rabbis have done everything they could do to write God, to write the Son out of God's story. And that's what made Christianity possible. Christianity isn't possible if the rabbis had not removed Yahweh's name, or if they hadn't written Dode out of this story. Those are their two most grievous mistakes that made Christianity, which came to haunt Jews for 2,000 years, possible. And it was their selling of Talmud stories, which were incorporated wholesale into the Quran, that made the Quran appear like it was an Abrahamic religion. Well, they were sold to Muhammad by rabbis in Yathrib. And when they mocked him for saying that Allah had inspired the stories that they had sold him. Muhammad silenced them, perpetrating genocide against the Jews in Arabia. And so the religion of Judaism created the two greatest adversaries for Jews, Christianity and Islam. And they're the ones misleading Jews and keeping them from knowing Yahweh today. They are the greatest threat, the greatest enemy of God's people is Judaism and rabbis. And that's why the first condition of the covenant is to walk away from Babel. And of course, what are they called? The Torah of the rabbis. It is the Babylonian Talmud, is it not?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Walk away from it. Well, that's our program for this evening. We will hopefully we'll be celebrating our second Pesach. You'll be celebrating your first one as we approach this time next week. And I thank you all for listening and for just letting us share the greatest story ever written about the greatest lives ever inspired, and this great opportunity to be part of Yahweh's family, to know the Creator God of the universe, to become His sons and daughters, to be enriched and empowered by Him. Again, thank you for listening. Have a wonderful Shabbat. Good night, one and all.
Good night. Night, Deke.
Lovely Shabbat to both of you.
Yes, thank you very much.
Good night.